The sound continues to come from the room, now more potent than ever. Wait, I suddenly say as I grab onto Eamon's arm. What about the spell Lydia left me to disarm your barrier? Would it work? His brows furrow together before he gives me a nod. Holding out his hand, he materializes the piece of paper I'd found in the Latin dictionary. Taking it from his hands, I say the words out loud, just as I'd said them before. When I'm done, I give Eamon a look as we both step towards the door. This time, Eamon tells me to stay back while he tries the door. It worked, I whisper in awe as he successfully turns the knob. Opening the door, we both enter the room. What? I blink in shock as I take in the sparse furnishings. There is only one chair placed with its back towards us and oriented towards the window, but not close enough to it so it would be visible from the outside of the house. But the most unusual thing is that there is a person there, someone sitting in that chair and rocking slightly with it. As we go deeper inside, Eamon places himself in front of me, assuming a protective stance. Hello? I call out as we tentatively walk around the chair. The closer we get, however, the more I can make out the features of the person sitting on it. She seems to be female, her hair the whitest white, her face serene and almost wrinkle-free despite her seemingly advanced age. Ma'am, are you all right? I ask slowly, worried she might be having some sort of crisis with the way she'd been screaming. But why? Why would Abel lock her here? Is she a former lover or something of that nature? Her age certainly seems to match.
Darcy, wait!
Eamon rasps as he stops in front of the woman, putting his arm in front of me. What is it? I frown. Slowly, she raises her head to look at us, her eyes a deep shade of blue, tears coating her lashes. She has a slender frame, looking even smaller due to her low weight. God, but would Abel have held her prisoner here?
She.
Eamon trails off, his face one of disbelief.
You're finally here,
the woman croaks, her voice harsh and seemingly overused. What is it? Who is it? I ask him, since he looks as if he knows something.
What? It's not possible. How can this be?
He whispers, staring at her as if he'd seen a ghost. Eamon, you're scaring me.
You don't remember me, Mummy.
The woman sets her eyes on me, her lips pulling up in a gentle smile. I freeze, my heart hammering in my chest. It can't be. I trail off in absolute shock. Lydia. I choke out her name, unable to help the tears from pouring down my cheeks as she gives a small nod. Oh my God, no. I mumble as I reach out to hug her and hold her in my arms. You're Lydia. My God. I sway lightly with her, barely in control of my feelings. Strong arms surround me as Eamon wraps us both in his embrace, holding tight.
I can't believe this is happening.
He whispers in a ragged voice, and as I turn my head to look at him, I note he's crying too. We stay like that for moments on end, unable to speak, only hug each other. God, this is Lydia. How can it be? Yet even as the questions pile in my head, my heart knows it to be true. There's an ineffable warmth at hugging her, at holding her once more in my arms, and I feel as if I'm transported again to the past when she was just a little girl, when the world was still a beautiful place, and we'd still been a family. Eventually, though, we separate, the lack of touch creating a crack in my soul. What happened? How come you're here? I ask. Aemon is doing his best to control himself, wiping at his tears and breathing hard.
Abel,
she answers, and it dawns on me that she has difficulty speaking.
He wouldn't let me die.
How? She takes a deep breath.
Spell. Necklace.
She manages to get out, slowly explaining that Abel had used the necklace for a necromancy spell that had put Lydia in limbo as she was about to die, stuck in a perpetual state of dying, but never actually doing so. Oh my God! I gasp as the enormity of it registers. She's been like this for years, for decades.
I should have fucking tortured that little shit.
Aemon bursts out, unusually so for him.
He should have suffered more. Fuck!
But why? Why would he do that?
He needed predictions.
She swallows.
He wanted the future.
He wanted you to help me get Aemon's powers, too, didn't he? She gives me a nod. It wasn't enough to kill his brother. He had to enslave his sister and torture her like this. My God, how is this possible? I cry out, unable to comprehend how someone could be so evil.
I didn't give him. I helped you.
Slowly, her mouth tips up in a satisfied smile, and it dawns on me that she's been doing this from the beginning, helping us by leaving little clues.
You knew,
Aemon whispers.
You knew this would happen to you, and you never told me a thing. Damn it, Diddy, you knew!
She shakes her head lightly.
I had to. For the future. To become the future.
What do you mean? I frown.
For you to live.
She nods, her smile brightening.
I helped as I could.
Lydia. I trail off, unable to believe she would sacrifice herself for us.
Don't trust them,
she says, managing to wink at me. My eyes widen in surprise. It was you. My God, Leo Pierce, too. It was you, I whisper. She nods.
All I could.
Thank you, I tell her from the bottom of my heart. I would have never agreed for you to sacrifice yourself for this, but thank you, Diddy. A tear falls down her cheek, and I catch it with my thumb, brushing it off her skin. I love you. We both love you so much, I whisper as I fight my own tears.
I know. I love you, too.
She looks at me and Aemon with the most beautiful smile. Even through a curtain of tears, her smile is still brighter than the sun.
Now I want to.
She pauses, swallowing hard.
Die.
What? I jump up. Aemon's arms are around me, keeping me from falling.
She's been in limbo, love. All this time, she's been on the verge of death, but she's never been allowed to. It would give her peace.
Diddy, I murmur, as I regard her and the weariness on her features. Yet how can I deny her something like that? Even as my heart breaks for this short reunion, I know that her time has gone, that that she needs to find her peace. At the same time, I look at her, and I'm unable to believe that I found her again only to lose her again.
Please,
she whispers, a broken word that has the power to unravel me. How? Tell us how. I get to my knees in front of her, holding her hands in my own. Tell us how.
Daddy.
She looks at Eamon.
You do it.
Eamon gives her a pained nod.
You will do it,
she says, as she regards both of us.
You will return to Ochgor.
I frown as I don't understand what she means, but I don't interrupt her.
You will reign.
I don't understand, I tell her, but she just smiles.
You will.
She gives me a feeble squeeze before she asks Eamon again for death.
Darling, you should go out.
I'm not leaving her, I say, shaking my head at him. I'll stay with you, I assure Lydia. After everything she's done, the least I can do is this. Her lips move as she whispers a barely audible thank you. Taking one of her hands, Eamon brings it to his lips before moving it to his forehead and staying like that for a moment.
I couldn't have done this without you, Diddy. You turned into such a wonderful woman, and I couldn't have been more proud of calling you my daughter. I love you.
He whispers before he moves his other hand to her heart, resting it over her chest. She still has the most beautiful smile on her face as she looks at us. I monitor her chest as it rises and falls. It does so for a few more times, before it stills completely, her head dipping down. Swiping my palm over her features, I close her eyes as I say a silent farewell, thanking her once more for everything she'd done, and apologizing for not being a better mother. And that's when I also know what to do next, what she would have wanted. Incendia, I murmur. Her entire body is swallowed up by black flames until only the ashes remain. But this way, no one will be able to disturb her from her peace. 1 second. That's how long I can hold everything in before a loud cry escapes me, the sob wrenched from deep within me as I fall to the floor.
Darcy, darling.
Eamon's arms come around me, his presence the only thing that keeps me from falling apart, and barely. I cry unlike I'd ever cried, for everyone we'd loved and lost.
Shh, please.
He rasps in my ear, holding me tight and trying to comfort me even as his own heart is breaking. Take me home, please, I beg him, my nails lodged in his skin as I hold on to him. In no time, though, we are back in the catacombs. My cries are out of control, tears coursing down my cheeks, my heart continuously breaking in my chest. But as I step away from him, I look into his eyes and see the same sadness mirrored there, mixed with physical pain and soul-searing agony. Eamon, my beloved Eamon. I reach for his shirt, tearing it from his body to reveal the absolutely horrifying sight that is his flesh, now wholly mangled by deep lacerations. Blood flows down his chest, so much so that his entire torso is painted red. My fingers are on his torso as I undo the buttons and push them down his legs, shocked to see even more damage. There is not 1 inch of skin untouched. My panicked gaze flies to his, but he just shakes his head.
No,
he whispers.
I won't ask you for anything, love. Not now. Not when our hearts are mourning.
He turns to head to the shower to wash the blood away, but I reach for his arm, stopping him. I'm offering. I take a deep breath as hiccups rack my body. Please, I whisper, as I slowly unbutton my dress, letting it fall to the ground. Make love to me, Eamon. Please love me and help me forget. Help me. My voice breaks as more cries erupt from my throat, the pain of it making me double over in pain.
My darling girl.
He breathes out, and before I know it, his naked chest is against mine as he lays me on the bed. Our bodies are fitted to perfection as we stare into each other's eyes, both equally heartbroken, both grieving Lydia's loss. Parting my legs, I wrap them around his waist as I reach between our bodies, grabbing his length and positioning it at my entrance. He's still staring into my eyes, a sadness unlike any other reflected in those beautiful, beautiful light eyes as they shift between red and black. He knows how precarious this moment is and is holding himself still so I can be in control. Please, I whisper, as I push his ringed head inside of me, his thickness immediately stretching me.
My love.
He releases a ragged breath as he pushes himself into me, his arms holding me tight as he brings his mouth to mine for a kiss that tastes like death, like tears, sorrow, and heartache. We kiss and kiss as he thrusts into me with slow precision, making love to me just like I'd asked him. Yet even as we touch and reach for each other, the emptiness in our souls remains. Pushing his head to the side, I encourage him to take what he needs from me, just as I bite into his skin, tasting the blood as it reaches the surface. So does he. The bite of pain makes me spasm around him as I feel his blood everywhere. In my mouth, on my body, even between my legs. At this moment, it's only us and the essence of life despite the fact that death hangs over us. I love you. I love you so much, I tell him as he increases his pace. Please never leave me, Eamon. I would never survive it.
Never, darling. Will you go? I go. If you exist, so do I.
He confesses thickly before he kisses me anew.
And if you're not, nor am I.
I lightly rake my nails down his back, feeling his wounds closing. He holds me in his tight embrace as he slowly pushes inside of me before retreating, doing so all over again until we both climax at the same time, our minds, just as our hearts, pulsing as one. It feels like an eternity later that I've calmed enough to stop crying. Eamon takes me in his arms, leading me to the shower and cleaning me thoroughly before sliding a big shirt over my head and putting me back to bed. I'm so spent, I can barely move. Tinkering with something to the side for a while, he comes back to me holding a necklace. The necklace. He'd placed the jeweled stone back into its original design.
Lydia would have wanted you to wear this, darling.
He whispers as he kneels on the bed beside me, placing the string around my neck. Thank you. I strain a smile as I skim my lips across his cheek. As I lower the neckline of the shirt to sneak the necklace inside, the jewel meets my skin, causing a heat unlike any other to erupt within me. My eyes widen in alarm, and I open my mouth to ask Eamon what's wrong, yet no sound comes out. There's just a scorching pain as the stone melts within me, searing itself onto my skin and becoming a part of me. That's when I see it. I see everything. Chapter 26. Eons ago, Viserion Empire, Arkgor. You're so pretty, I murmur lovingly as I gently wipe the leaf of the pale pink flower. It still does not have a name, though it's been close to a season since I've created it through a mixture of two other flowers. It's been a hard endeavor, but as it has grown increasingly larger, I'm close to declaring it a success. Even better, it's just in time for my birthday tomorrow, when my mother will finally visit me again. I'll be able to show it to her and hopefully earn her praise. Hopefully. A sigh escapes me at the thought. My mother is not one to give out praises easily, just as she is not usually impressed with anything. She knows of my love for flowers, and she'd equipped my home with a large conservatory to grow any flower or plant I'd like. But in many ways, that is only to excuse her absence, and the fact that more often than not, she forgets she has a daughter. I continue to wipe every little leaf carefully before I step back, admiring my year's worth of work. Alas, it's not like I have many options. I've been trapped within these walls my entire life. I've absolutely no idea how life in the outside world is, except that it is dangerous. The first time I asked my mother what was outside my front door, or whether there was something else beyond the ocean, she'd told me there was a bad, bad world that would only hurt and exploit me. At that time, I wasn't very knowledgeable, nor did I understand much of what she was telling me, so I repeated the question a few years after. "Why can I not go out, Mother? Seyma does so all the time," I'd asked, confused why Seyma, my maid and cook at the time, was able to step out into the world while it remained completely forbidden to me. It was at that point that on one of her rare visits, my mother had gifted me a set of history books about Arkgor, telling me to study them and pose the question to her again when I was done. Hungry for anything that would tell me the secrets of the outside world, I'd devoured the books, reading them again and again until I memorized everything by heart. The stories all revolved around the Viserion Empire and how it had gained supremacy over the entire continent, subjugating smaller, less powerful kingdoms, while declaring war on the stronger ones. It was then that I understood what my mother had meant by the fact that the outside world was bad. It was filled with war, famine, and disease. It was a world in which the Viserion Empire waged war continuously, killing everyone who stood in its way. And since the Empire had first appeared on the map 15,000 years ago, there had not been one day without war, with casualties that kept on piling. So on my mother's next visit, I'd pose the question to her once more. "Here," she'd said, pointing to the map of Arkgor. "Hundreds of years ago, this used to be the kingdom of Melina." The area she'd shown me was right at the border of the Viserion Empire, and it was the latest kingdom it had incorporated after a lengthy war. It was also the area we found ourselves in. "With the Empire growing in size, its population became more diverse, too." She'd explained that there were many types of peoples, with different abilities and appearances, some humanoid, some non-humanoid. To me, who'd only ever seen a handful of people in my entire life, everything had seemed so interesting.
"Yet everyone on Arkgor has something in common. Despite the fact that some may be stronger, faster, or more powerful than others, everyone has one fatal weakness."
The books had detailed all about the varied species on Arkgor, most of which boasted a slew of abilities, with some of them able to live tens of thousands of years. Despite that, though, there was one thing that was able to kill any life form on Arkgor. Rhodium, otherwise known as Viserion Silver. To the weaker, even a scratch could prove life-threatening, for the metal had some properties that did not allow the body to heal itself, the wound ultimately festering and leading to death. To the strongest, though, they were able to withstand shallow cuts of rhodium better. They were still threatened by it. One strike to the heart, and that person would be dead. The metal was widespread in the northern part of Arkgor, the region which coincided with the first settlement of the Viserions. According to legends, the first Viserians had seen the devastating effects of the silver and had weaponized it. Because this region was so abundant in it, they managed to turn it into an advantage by equipping every soldier with it and building a never-before-seen army. That turned out to be the prime advantage of the Viserians. Though they could be felled by the silver as well, they had the upper hand in battle against foreign soldiers who were not properly equipped with such deadly weapons. While all the other parts of the world scrambled to find their own supplies of rhodium, the Viserian Empire grew exponentially, investing everything in its military and arming it with the perfect weapons to subjugate the rest of the world. It was only when a coalition of the Western kingdoms had managed to find a deposit of rhodium deep in their mountains that everything had changed, and though the states remained at war, there has been a long standstill. With the rhodium scales evened out, everything else became a matter of individual prowess rather than any hidden advantage. Unfortunately, the effects were far-reaching. Because the world has been at war for so long, only a few cities are livable, with clean water and food. The rest are all wastelands, ravaged by the military and scavengers. But that hasn't been the only effect. Previously long-lived species have seen a decrease in their lifespans, as a direct result of the famine and a disease that followed the war. Though initially everyone's weakness had been rhodium, the conflict had caused some species to develop other vulnerabilities, one of which was childlessness, the decreased ability to carry gestations to term or birth viable offspring. The books had also detailed never-before-seen plagues that attacked some species, and there was the implication that they'd been created by the Viserians as an alternative to rhodium.
The Viserian Empire is always looking for a way to regain its dominance. Since rhodium became widespread in the entirety of Arkgor, they've lost their bargaining chip. And that's where you come in.
Me?
You have a never-before-seen ability of withstanding any rhodium injury, or any type of plague, she'd said, just as she'd removed a small rhodium blade, cutting my skin with it before cutting hers too. Well, mine had healed immediately. Hers had not.
If my assessment is correct, your ability would be priceless for the Viserians, and they would use it in the most horrific ways, not to mention what they would do to you.
My mother had detailed the atrocious ways in which the Viserian Empire would use my ability to lay siege to other nations and effectively conquer the entire Arkgor. With my healing powers, nothing would stop them.
They are absolutely despicable, Sela. The Emperor is a vile man whose god is power and only mistress is greed, and his general is the worst scourge to ever be born in this world.
The Shadow General, so called for his ability to move faster than shadows, is purported to be the most dangerous man alive. A rare warrior breed, no one knows exactly what his ancestry is, or why he is as powerful as he is, allegedly more than the Emperor himself. He'd been the one to lead the Empire's armies into Melina, conquering the kingdom and executing its ruling monarchs before the entire population, while giving them a choice: submit and live, or rebel and die. The same night, the general alone had slaughtered more than 1,000 people who dared stand up against Viseria.
Though our kingdom is long gone, we haven't forgotten what the Viserians did to us. We'll never forget, she added vehemently, telling me that they would ultimately regain what was originally theirs, but that it was imperative that I be hidden.
You'll be our hope when the time is right. Until then, you need to stay safe, and the Viserians must never find out about your power.
I understand, I told her. Since then, I stopped asking her about the outside world, and I have become used to my own little haven. After all, I am safe here. I have food and drink, and there is no one who could experiment on me. When I'm done with my one row of flowers, I move to the other, cleaning them thoroughly. There aren't many things to do here besides tending to my garden and spending moments on end gazing out at the ocean from my balcony.
I have a small library that's ever-expanding with the books Melly brings me weekly, after my mother has approved them, of course. It was only by chance that I found out that Melly has to run everything by her first, and I cannot understand why. I already know most there is to know about Arkgore, and what goes on in the outside world. As I told her, I've no intention of going outside if it means putting myself in danger. Yet she still continues to monitor the contents of my books. So far, I've noticed that she's restricted my access to anything that might have romantic content. I'd received none of the ballads I'd asked for, yet I'd still managed to read summaries of them in other works. My guess is that my mother believes that such fanciful notions might make me sad, since I am unlikely to ever experience them. She is right, to an extent, since who would not want to live an epic love story? Yet I also know the reality of what is implied in the history books. The outside world is so horrible, there is absolutely no place for romance. When everything is rotten to the core, when the only relationship model is of master and vassal, what is there to emulate? Marriages are conducted for business purposes only, either to conjoin two strong lines for the powers their future offspring would have, or for political reasons to make alliances. Despite the fact that my mother had told me she thinks I would be useful for the Melina cause in the future, I hope she did not mean that I would have to marry someone. The mere thought of it makes my skin crawl. I'd rather stay in my tiny home forever than let that happen.
Miss! Miss!
Melly's voice reaches my ears. Turning, I see her dash into my conservatory.
Your mother is here!
Now, I blink in surprise. But tomorrow is my birthday, not today. I frown. Had I gotten the day wrong? I'll be the first one to admit that I'm not the best at tracking time. When you're losing yourself in the same thing on a daily basis, the days tend to blur into one another. I don't discount that I might be mistaken about the date. I'm about to be 18, and if I've become so bad about keeping track of time so young, then I don't know what will happen when I'm a couple hundred years old. Will I become insane? Despite being used to my lot in life and trying to make the best of my situation, I'm more than aware that it's not ideal. Though most days I enjoy my time with my plants, there are those when I feel like throwing myself off my balcony and into the ocean. I probably would have done that if not for the rocky cliffs that would destroy me on the way down.
She wants to see you, in the office,
Melly relates. Nodding, I follow her out of the garden and into the house. Aside from the ground floor that houses the kitchen and a study, there is only one room upstairs where I sleep. Mother, I incline my head in greeting. Immediately, I take in her fancy gown, green with specks of gold, the bodice being sewn onto geckie bones, a rare and expensive creature. This type of couture is only available to the rich, or at least that's what I'd read in books. I bite my lip as I cannot help but compare the difference in our clothes. Looking down, I stare for a moment at what used to be a dark blue gown, but has now faded around the hem and in some areas I dropped fertilizer on. I don't own too many clothes since my mother has always said I'd never need them anyway. But the few that I have are all in dire condition and need replacing. I should probably ask her for some new clothes as a birthday present. But there's also something else I want more than anything, and though I might have to endure another year of tattered gowns, I'd rather have that.
Come, Sella, I must speak with you at once.
I nod, worried at her tone. Reaching for the chair across from her, I take a seat and assume my stance, back straight, hands politely on my thighs, and gaze forward. I might be isolated from society, but I'm not a savage, or I don't believe I am. Truth be told, I'd learned everything from those damned books in an effort to impress my mother and maybe have her visit me more often. Has something happened, Mother? I ask in an even voice. My mother strains a smile. We share the same features, black hair and dark blue eyes set against pale complexion. We could potentially pass for twins if not for two differences. My lips are plumper than hers, and she has a birthmark in the shape of a clover on her upper left cheek. Lady Luck, as I'd heard Melly call her. There's been a disturbance in the Empire. I'm going to station more guards around the house. If you hear something, or if anyone comes inside, you know the protocol. You hide in the East Chamber.
What disturbance? She purses her lips.
The Emperor was assassinated. There's a rebel group that's been sighted all over the capital and around the borders of the Empire. It's better to be vigilant.
But isn't that a good thing if he's dead? It's what you've been waiting for all along. I burst out in happiness for her. Ever since I was young, she'd told me how much she hated the Emperor and the Empire. Yet as I look at her, my smile slowly falls. She doesn't look happy. If anything, she looks weary, dark circles forming under her eyes, her features slightly gaunt where they were full before.
It would have been a joyous event indeed, but with the rebels at large, it only makes this situation more dangerous.
But what about the Melina resistance? Maybe it could ally itself with the rebels and...
Since when do you know what's best in politics, Sella?
She gives me a grave look.
A new emperor has already been crowned, and the entire empire will be searched for traitors, after which they will all be executed as an offering to Vessa, she says, mentioning the ancient Viserion god, coincidentally a god of war.
I don't understand.
Of course you don't. These are topics for grown-ups. In any event, I want you to be careful if you hear anything out of the ordinary. I will not be able to come again for quite some time until matters are stabilized in the capital.
I frown. Why would she be reliant on the matters in the capital? She doesn't even live there. I don't understand anything. She should be happier that the Emperor was killed. How is the new Emperor? Her lip twitches in disgust, and something akin to guilt flashes across her face.
He will bring the Empire into a new era, she vaguely answers before standing up and heading to the door.
It's my birthday, I call out, surprised she hasn't mentioned it at all.
That's right,
she says after a moment of deliberation, as if it had completely escaped her mind.
Happy birthday.
And my present? I smile sweetly. She opens her mouth to speak before closing it.
I'm sorry, I couldn't find it.
But I gave you the clipping last year, I say dejectedly, the implication clear. She'd had time to find it. Every year on my birthday, she gives me a gift while asking me what I'd like for the following year. Prepared with my most wanted wish, I'd given her a page from one of my books that detailed the existence of a purple plant in the northern part of the Empire. It might be quite far away, but during the year she could have had someone get it, could she not? I'd been wanting it from the moment I'd spotted it in the book, knowing it would complement my other flowers perfectly. But more than anything, it would help me attempt a new hybrid.
Maybe next year, she tells me in a dead voice as she heads to the door. Remember what I told you. If you hear anything, you hide.
I nod, straining a smile as I wave her goodbye. And as the door closes, I realize I won't get any birthday celebration. This was it. I stare for a moment at the door, for one moment truly wishing I could wrench it open and run out into the world, live like I'd never lived before. Yet just as the thought comes, a wave of fear goes down my back. Besides my books, what do I know about the outside world? What do I know of conversing with people or avoiding danger? Truth be told, even if I had the chance to leave, I would be too scared to do so.
I left the food in the kitchen, miss. There's plenty for the entire week since your mother has tightened security.
Melly's words startle me from my thoughts. You're leaving too? I turn to her, doing my best to hide the hurt from my voice. She nods.
I've washed all your clothes and cleaned your bedroom. I'll see you in a week, miss.
And just like that, she's out of the door too, and once more I'm left feeling lonelier than ever before. Trudging my way back to my garden, I try to think of ways to amuse myself so this awful feeling can go away. We're alone again, I murmur as I squat next to my roses. What do you think I should do for the rest of the afternoon? I nod as if the flower spoke to me. Yes, I could reread the book on Lyrian botany. A sudden noise at the end of the garden startles me, and I jump to my feet. "Who's there?" I demand, remembering what my mother had told me. But if the noise is coming from the end of the garden, and the trap door to the underground room is at the end of the garden, then what should I do? Is this all in my head, I wonder? Maybe my mother's tale had scared me a little more than I admitted to myself. Just to convince myself that I'm being silly, I walk towards the end of the path, all the while scanning my surroundings. Nothing seems out of the ordinary. Maybe it is all in my mind. When I don't spot anyone at the end of the garden, I sigh to myself just as my pulse seemingly settles down. Yet it's too soon. In just 1 second, I feel cold metal against my throat.
"Don't move."
The deepest voice I've ever heard whispers in my ear, the warm air from his mouth sending shivers down my spine. Terror engulfs me at once. "Who are you?" I ask, barely keeping my voice from trembling.
"Why was Lady Luck visiting you?"
he demands in a thick voice, the blade digging into my skin. The sun hits the metal, its shine revealing its rhodium. "I don't know what you're talking about," I murmur. All at once, he pulls me closer, fitting my body to his hard, big one as he slices the blade across my neck. His other hand comes to rest across my waist, keeping me still against him.
"You have one more try, lady. Why was Lady Luck visiting you?"
Seeing as the blade continues to advance into my skin, I debate whether I should tell him or not. Yet the most important thing is that he cannot know I can heal from rhodium, that it does not harm me as it does everyone else. Maybe cooperating for now is the only way to keep him from finding out. "She's my mother."
"Lies,"
he grits.
"Lady Luck has no children."
"I'm telling the truth," I breathe out, trying to push down the panic that's threatening to overtake me. This won't end well, I just know it. Tears appear at the corners of my eyes as my entire body starts shaking.
"Who is your father, then?"
he asks again. "I don't know. She never told me. Please, I'm telling the truth." His teeth clank together, and I know he doesn't approve of my answer. By chance, I look down and see blood soaking his sleeve, drops falling to the ground. "You're injured," I quickly add. "I can help you if you let me go."
"Prove to me that Lady Luck is your mother,"
he says, ignoring my previous words. "I don't know how," I whisper. "She comes to visit me a few times every year, but never stays longer than a few hours." "You could look at me. We look alike," I offer, wincing at my own words. Suddenly, he releases me. Before he can turn me around to look at me, I bring my sleeve to my neck, wiping the blood away. The wound is already healed, so I can only hope his precision with a sword isn't too great, that he'll know something is wrong. I barely put my hand down when I find myself face to face with him. Slowly, I look up, my eyes widening in even more terror as I look upon him. He's absolutely gigantic. He must be twice my size. His arm alone looks like it could squeeze the life out of me, and I doubt I would heal from that. As I examine him, I come to a stop when I note his eyes, the lightest shade of blue I've ever seen. His hair is white, tied together to his back in a warrior type of fashion I'd seen drawn in my books. His body is fully garbed in black leather, the combination with his light features making him look awe-striking indeed. He would be breathtakingly beautiful, if not for the scowl that mars his features and the annoyed twitch in his jaw. His gaze sweeps over me, studying me from head to toe in a manner that makes me want to run and hide. But seeing what I'm dealing with, I know he would not hesitate to do something to me if I defied him in any way. I keep my spine straight for his perusal, despite the fear that settled in my stomach. Yet I can't find it in me to let him see how much he affects me.
You say you're her daughter?
He repeats. His thumb touches my chin as he tips my head up to regard him.
Look at me properly, female, not like a scared mouse.
His voice booms, making every cell in my body vibrate with something. I squeeze my eyes shut for a moment to push against a sudden wave of nausea. Breathing harshly through my nose, I feel his fingers on my skin as he grasps my chin tightly.
Now,
he commands, and something in his tone makes me obey. My eyes snap open, my gaze meeting his. His eyes flare with interest as he takes a step closer to me, bringing his face to mine and sniffing me. He inhales deeply, moving his nose around my hair and neck before stopping right in front of my face. His nose is almost touching mine as he watches me intently.
What is your name, female?
He asks in a honeyed voice, entirely different from the one before. Please don't hurt me, I whisper, afraid of what his interest in me might be. I'd read enough about the violence happening in the world to know what could happen to a helpless woman. Yet I'd never thought it would visit me here, in my very own home.
Your name?
He repeats. Sela, I answer, swallowing hard.
Sela.
He nods to himself.
And you are Lady Luck's daughter. I can see the similarity.
He muses, more to himself.
Yet I can also see the differences.
I nod slowly. My mother has a clover on her right cheek, and her lips are thinner. I recite the differences like a fool, not realizing my last statement brought his attention to my mouth. His own twitch in response, the corners curling into a sardonic smile.
Wrong.
He clicks his tongue against his teeth.
There's one more difference.
What? I blink in surprise.
Your eyes. They are warm, where hers are cold.
He states matter-of-factly. The words stun me, but more than anything, I'm still reeling from the fact that there is a stranger threatening me in my own home, one who seems to be well acquainted with my mother. All at once, a spark of outrage erupts within me as I imagine what type of relationship my mother would entertain with this brute. Surely they aren't.
I would never lay a finger on that viper of your mother.
He snarls, the mere illusion making him angry. Just as I open my mouth to reply, I close it, as I realize I hadn't spoken that accusation out loud. The only way he could have known it is if he read my mind. You cur! I push him off. You could have read my mind all along to see I am telling the truth. Why torment me so? A smile plays at his lips as he regards me, almost as if one would look upon a jester at court.
You're an interesting little thing,
he drawls. And you're an unmannered brute. I point my finger at him, seemingly having lost all my fear from before. But so be it. If he's going to have his wicked way with me, it's going to happen eventually, and I will still be powerless to stop it. Isn't that the truth? That I know absolutely nothing about defending myself against anything.
You said you could treat injuries.
He changes the subject as he folds his sleeve to reveal a very nasty gash on his forearm. I shake my head, my expression mutinous. I don't treat vile people such as yourself. Please see yourself out, I demand as I point to the exit. He doesn't move. He simply regards me with the same lazy smirk as before, his eyes skimming outrageously over my body. And stop looking at me like that, I mumble.
Like what?
His brows go up in question. You know what, I huff.
Ah, lovely Sela.
You're a fiery lass, are you not?
What? My eyes widen as my mind homes in on one word. Lovely. He called me lovely. Instinctively, my hand goes to my face as I feel heat climb up my cheeks. No one's ever called me lovely before. Yet just as I realize the direction of my thoughts, I shake myself. I can't fall prey to him just because he's spouting flowery words to me.
I've decided to let you tend to my wounds.
He says as he plants himself on the bench at the end of the garden, his hands unfastening his vest as he lays it on the ground. You've decided, I repeat incredulously. He continues with his chemise, slowly unbuttoning his blood-soaked shirt. What are you doing? I ask in horror as I see the direction he's taking.
What does it look like I'm doing?
He raises a brow as he gives me a lopsided smile.
I'm getting ready for you.
I said I won't tend to you.
No, you said you would tend to me if I let you go. I'm accepting your bargain.
I narrow my eyes at him. From his previous murderous mood, this one is too laid back and jovial, almost as if he is having fun at my expense. I do not know who he is, but I know he is not welcome in my garden, and I tell him so. You already let me go. Now please leave, I say with all the confidence I can muster, folding my arms over my chest. He tilts his head to the side, shaking it slowly and releasing a tisk sound. Before I know it, he's behind me again, his big, entirely too big hands splayed over my waist.
Now we back to the negotiating table, lass.
He whispers in my hair. Let me go, I breathe out. My pulse accelerates in what I think is extreme fear, but it makes no sense the way my body quickly yields to his in a way I've never experienced before, nor read about. It's almost as if, despite knowing he represents danger, my body's decided the opposite. Quite alarming, if I'm honest, especially as a sigh escapes my lips and I lean into him. I lean into him. What type of madness is this? Let me go, you brute, I repeat, attempting to push him off me. But he doesn't budge. After all, how could someone my size take on someone his size?
Treat my wounds, and I will let you go. You have my promise, lovely Sella.
He murmurs softly.
I can see you have various healing plants in here. You're a healer, are you not?
I gulp down as I fear discovery. If he hasn't already looked into my mind and found out everything. Fine, I reply. Just like before, he disappears from behind me and appears once more on the bench. I've read about the diverse species on Arkgor, and I've gone through their abilities, yet I can't seem to place his. He looks humanoid, like me. At the same time, though, there's something that makes him so much more, something I couldn't even begin to imagine. He leisurely unbuttons the rest of his shirt, before discarding it on the floor. It's at that moment that I freeze in shock, not because his physique is just as impressive as his size, or as mesmerizing as the beauty of his features, but because there's a sharp arrow protruding from his chest, right below his heart. A rhodium arrowhead. You're not dead, I whisper. How?
Decidedly not, though my guess is that not for long.
His eyes then flash a dangerous red, sending a shiver down my body, yet I'm not sure if it's still one of fear. I give him a brisk nod as I come closer, my eyes moving all over his chest. I'll need to clean it and add some Sveka, I murmur, as I take note of all the injuries on his body. There are a few deep lacerations that are oozing blood, but they are almost drowned out by the myriad of scars marring his skin. Just how many times has he been hurt?
Are you going to do something or stare at me all day?
He drawls. My cheeks heat up as my eyes meet his before I avert my gaze. Grabbing a towel from the basket I always have on hand, I take it to the small well on the far right of the garden. I wet it thoroughly, and I pour some water into a small container. Bringing them to his side, I place them on the bench next to him before I go to my Zveka row, a plant from the Far East. It's reputed to be one of the few plants that can combat the anti-healing properties of the rhodium, acting as a cleanser and flushing everything out of the wound. Because of its use, it's also exceedingly rare, having been used to near extinction. Bringing everything back to his side, I take a mortar and pestle and make it into a paste. I can feel his gaze burning into me as he studies every move I make, his shrewd eyes taking everything in, doubtlessly also reading my mind to make sure I don't do anything to harm him. There's something savage about him, an intensity that makes me react with both fear and curiosity. Dropping the mortar to the ground, I bring the wet towel to his injuries, cleansing them of blood and other debris before applying a thick layer of paste. He never makes a sound, not when I clean his wounds, nor when I push the paste into his open flesh. He's just silent. Somehow, that's even more frightening. When I'm done with his more minor wounds, I focus on the arrow. Biting my lip, I debate how to go about it. It looks to be so close to his heart that I'm afraid that by tipping it even a little to the right, it could kill him. Maybe I should. As I bring my hand to grasp the arrow, he suddenly stops me. Looking up, I find his grave gaze on me.
Try to kill me, and I'll blow your brains out with one thought, lass.
He tells me in a gravelly voice, his glare as icy as the light color of his eyes. I nod slowly. That seems quite far-fetched, but why do I believe it? It must be his eyes, his eerily light eyes. They absolutely frighten me. Gripping the end of the arrow, I try to remove it, but it's lodged right between his ribs, and I don't have the necessary strength for it. Can you do it? I whisper. If you pull it at this angle. I pause as I take his big hand and wrap it around the metal, angling it upwards. It shouldn't touch your heart. He grunts, his eyes still on me. And just like that, he continues to watch me as he wrenches the arrow out of his chest successfully. Blood gushes out of his wound, flowing freely down his chest. Immediately I grab the towel, holding it on top of it. Are you not in pain? I ask tentatively as I see no change in his expression, not even a hint of pain.
Pain and I are intimately acquainted.
He grunts, though he doesn't expand on that. Infuriating male. When the bleeding slows down, I repeat the process, stuffing the paste inside his circular wound until not one drop of blood can come out. Done, I murmur as I get to my feet. Yet before I can take a step back, I find myself firmly on his lap as he cradles my hip, his hand close, too close to my bottom. My eyes widen at his scandalous behavior. You brute! I whimper as I push at his shoulders. You'll open your wounds again.
Shh!
He says and places a finger to my lips, all the while staring at me as if he can't quite decipher me, despite obviously having the ability to read my mind. Unless he can't do it all the time. Once more, he leans into me, inhaling deeply.
You're not mated,
he states. How could you know? The corner of his lip tips up.
Any man of sound mind would have put his mark on you if you were,
he says, his hand cupping my cheek and tipping my face up towards him.
You smell fresh, Sela, like an unplucked daisy.
You should put me down, I whisper, when I see how close he is to me.
In a moment.
he murmurs as he leans forward, brushing his cheek against mine. The heat from his skin transfers to mine, making me still as unnatural thoughts erupt in my mind, things I should have no business imagining. Yet his pull is too strong, so much so, in fact, that I can't help but lean forward, inhaling his scent too, and marveling at the sweet musk that emanates from his skin. The combination of blood and sweat should repulse me, but if anything, it makes my loins heat up as something bubbles inside of me. I release a soft sigh as I bury my nose in his hair, breathing him in deeply as he does the same with me. I don't know what type of madness this is, what kind of wicked mind sorcery, but my body has a will of its own, as it can only yield to his. His face is nestled between my shoulder and my neck, as he releases an unnatural growl just as his lips skim the surface of my skin, his teeth scraping lightly over my flesh. The slight pain is enough to make me regain my composure as I jump out of his arms. "You need to leave," I tell him pointedly. His eyes flash a deep red at me, his nostrils flaring as animalistic energy rolls off him, especially as he gets to his feet and takes a step towards me. Yet before he can reach for me, his ears perk up, his features twisting into a scowl.
"I'll be back, Sarah."
I blink, and he is gone, as is any evidence he'd been here. Not a few moments later, the door to the house bursts open as my mother, together with some soldiers, comes into my garden. "Where is he?" my mother demands as she wildly looks around the place. "What do you mean?" I frown.
"The rebel must be here. Search the place."
The soldiers quickly run all around my house, searching every nook. "What is this, mother?" I demand sharply.
"That blood. Whose is it?"
she hisses accusingly.
"It's mine."
I boldly lie. I cut myself while tending to the garden. It's nothing new. I roll my eyes. She won't be able to demand to see my injuries, just as she won't want to let any soldier get too close to me, in case they start asking questions. Giving me a pointed look, she steps back, but not before she leaves me with a warning.
"Be very careful if you ever lie to me, Sella, or you will not like the consequences."
Her words startle me, as does the malicious expression on her face, something I'd never seen before. "I won't," I tell her, a lie in itself. Huffing at me, she turns and commands everyone to follow her out. Soon, I'm all alone and wondering how I got myself into this, because no matter how much I look at it, something deep inside of me tells me my life as I know it is about to change. And it all starts with a frightening warrior with a beautiful face, the one who becomes a recurrent theme in my dreams. The house is eerily quiet at night, and as I twist and turn in my bed, I realize sleep is unlikely to come, especially after I'd woken up from the most scandalous dream I've ever had. It's that brute. It's all because of him and his terrifying eyes. "But you liked them," I huff to myself as I get out of bed, wrapping a shawl around my shoulders and stepping out onto the balcony. The light breeze of the night brushes against my skin. I release a deep sigh as I tip my head up, inhaling the clean air. The turbulent waters crash against the rocky cliffs, the sound comforting to my ears as I lean over the railing, looking over the ever-familiar background. Who was he? Not for the first time since he'd left, I can't help but wonder about his identity. According to my mother, he is a rebel. Remembering how he'd looked, I can definitely see it in him. He'd been so big and strong, his body frighteningly massive, yet he hadn't hurt me. Aside from the initial prick of his blade, he hadn't done anything to me. Maybe I'm looking too much into this. After all, it had been a first for me to come into contact with such a male specimen, one that not only scared me, but also... A blush goes up my cheeks as I realize the direction of my thoughts.
But that's exactly why he'd intruded in my dreams. Because despite the initial fear, I'd also felt... want. Or at least that's what I think it had been. His touch alone had made my skin erupt in goosebumps, my pulse shooting through the roof. When he'd looked into my eyes, I'd felt every little part of my body heat up, a strange tingling developing in my lower belly. Retrospectively, maybe everything I'd felt had been because he is the first male I've ever seen up close. Too close. All my life, I've only been around my mother, her friends, and the various servants she'd hired. Is it any wonder that I'd been so struck by his impressive presence? Yet somehow I doubt any other male would compare with him. At least in the books I'd read, they never appeared as large or as hypnotizing. I slap my cheeks twice as I chastise myself. No matter how I think of him, I end up at the same conclusion. He intrigued me. Maybe a touch too much. Giving up on sleep, even though there are a couple of hours left until dawn, I head downstairs to the kitchen to check what Melly left for me. I'm pleased to find an assortment of cooked meals, as well as cold cuts which she'd thoroughly bathed in salt, to hold for the entire week. Despite providing for me as best as she can, my mother would never allow anyone to live with me. The more time someone spent with me, the more likely it would be for them to discover my abilities. And as she'd repeatedly told me, that was simply out of the question. There had been an incident when I was younger with one of my maids. She'd seen me heal after cutting myself on some glass. The next day, she'd been gone. I don't know what happened to her, but I hope my mother didn't do anything unseemly to her. Taking advantage that some of the dishes are still fresh, I pour myself a bowl of stew. As soon as I taste it, though, I wince, realizing it's missing seasoning. Not one to despair, I take a pair of scissors and head to my garden, since I have an entire section dedicated to spices and edible plants. Yet the moment I step into the moonlit area, I'm struck by something at the end of the garden. Something sitting on the bench that brutish man had previously occupied. Frowning, I slowly step towards it, afraid it could be something dangerous. The poorly lit area obstructs my view at first, and though I can make out the outline, I don't realize what it is until I stop in front of the bench. My hand flies to my mouth in surprise, my heart beating loud in my chest. There, placed haphazardly in a makeshift bowl, are the flowers I'd been desiring as my birthday gift, the purple blooms I'd only seen in the pages of a book. I swallow hard as I take the bowl in my hand, surveying its state. Immediately, I can tell that this had been done by someone unfamiliar with gardening, the entire situation messy. At the same time, the root of the plant has been perfectly preserved, so I can move it into my garden. At once, I know it's not my mother who's done this. She hadn't even remembered what I'd wanted for my birthday, and she certainly wouldn't have been able to journey to the other end of the empire to get it for me. Only someone with the ability to cover great distances in moments' time would have been able to do this. Someone like...
You like my present, Sarah?
His smooth voice hits me right in the chest, causing my heart to stop for a second before resuming beating. Thump, thump, thump. As if being reset, it assumes a different rhythm that coincidentally matches his breaths. You, I state accusingly, turning and coming face to face with him. The same male from before, the one who'd been haunting my thoughts ever since he'd disappeared from my sight. What are you doing here? I narrow my eyes at him as I try to decipher his intentions.
I told you I'd be back.
He's wearing different clothes from before. A pair of beige linen pants and a loose white shirt. Even though his garb is ordinary, it does nothing to decrease his formidable appeal. It certainly doesn't make an effort to hide his massive chest or his muscular thighs. Despite the loose fit of the clothes, his muscles strain against the fabric. If he'd wanted to pass for a simple peasant, he most definitely failed. No peasant would look that. decadent. Yet there's another feature that makes me still in my tracks. His white hair, previously tied tightly at his nape, now flows down his shoulders, its sheen absolutely magnificent. "Why would you be back?" I stammer. He'd seemed acquainted with my mother, though his opinion of her had struck me as abysmal. Is that why he's here? To use me to get to my mother? To exact some type of revenge on her? But why? Surely if he's a rebel, then he should recognize they are on the same side against the Empire.
Perish that thought, lovely Sela. I'm only here for you.
He murmurs as he steps closer. Instinctively, I take a step back until my legs meet the bench. I teeter for a moment before I fall. Yet it's not as gauche as I would have imagined. Not when my bottom meets a soft yet hard surface, strong arms wrapping around me and taking the little potted flower out of my hands.
You'll hurt yourself,
he whispers in my ear. Just like before, I find myself speechless, not only in the face of his impressive abilities, but also his equally devastating presence. I drag a ragged breath into my lungs as his heat engulfs me, seeping through my clothes. I haven't given you leave to touch me. I muster a feeble protest.
You haven't vocalized it, but your eyes do not lie.
He speaks in my ear.
I'm not the only one feeling this madness, am I, lovely Sela?
He murmurs softly. Damn it, but why does he have to be so appealing? Even operating under the impression that he is some kind of ruffian, a rebel who is sought by the authorities, I still cannot steel myself against him. Is this normal, I wonder? Am I just so starved for interaction that I lose my head to the first male I meet? Would I react the same to another? A growl escapes him, the sound so potent it travels through my veins as shivers overtake me. Yet I'm not afraid. At least, it's not the type of fear one would have for one's life. It's something utterly different.
It's not normal. Of that, I can assure you.
He rasps against me, once more reading my mind. Stop reading my thoughts, I hiss at him.
It's not my fault you broadcast them so loudly, lass, but maybe this will answer your question.
He says, as he brings his lips down my neck again, inhaling me deeply while trailing his open mouth down my flesh. A wave of awareness hits me at once, places I'd never given much thought to flaring to life and throbbing. And it's all because this stranger is licking me.
Remove all thoughts of other males from your mind,
he states savagely.
You will not react to another the same, Sela. Of that you have my vow.
My lips tremble as I attempt to form a reply. His touch is everywhere, lulling me into a sense of security, unlike any I've ever known. It's not just interaction I'm starved for. It's touch, too. And when he buries his face in my neck, I can only arch against him, purring happily at the way his touch feels. When was the last time someone had given me a hug? I can't remember. Maybe it is madness that I am yielding with nary a protest, but starvation gnaws at me as I cover his hands with my own, throwing my head back and allowing him more freedom of movement. I wiggle in his lap, feeling the hilt of his sword poking me in my back, but trying not to mind it too much. He lays small, sweet kisses all over the column of my neck.
You smell so good. So fucking delectable. I'd like nothing more than to eat you.
Somehow, that one sentence is enough to put a damper on my shameless behavior, especially as I'd read about some species that, well, eat others. Jumping out of his arms, I take a few steps back, biting my lip and regarding him with apprehension. His eyes flicker between red and black. Now that is something I've never read about. Do they change at will, Or does something influence them? He rises from the bench, a smirk pulling at his lips. It's at the same time that I notice that the front of his pants has become tinted. Is that what was poking me in the backside? My wide eyes meet his as I continue to walk backwards.
My eyes change according to my mood.
He answers casually. What does red or black mean, then? He smiles lazily, almost like a cat.
Black is when I'm at my tipping point. Red is halfway there.
He explains. Where? I frown.
Oh, Cella, you're such an innocent, are you not?
Well, will you tell me or will you not? I snap as I cross my arms over my chest, tapping my foot at him. Odd that I'm feeling so daring with this man when he has the power to snap me in two. My healing abilities aside, I have no doubt he would do what nothing seems to have ever worked. Destroy me.
War,
he says. And as I blink, he appears right before me.
It's the bloodlust in me that claws its way to the surface.
You want to hurt me? I ask as I gulp down a sliver of fear.
No.
He shakes his head, his lips drawn up in an amused smile.
I'm finding there's a second reason for it.
I flutter my lashes in confusion. Leaning towards me, he brushes his lips across my earlobe before speaking.
Lust.
Lust, I repeat, dumbfounded.
I'm a war machine, Cella. I was forged with the explicit purpose of bathing in my enemy's blood, slaughtering, marauding, killing. If my eyes turn black, make no mistake, I don't lose myself to the bloodlust.
He drawls seductively.
I give myself to it.
Is that what this is about? I ask as I bring my hand to my neck, trailing my fingers over the surface he'd scraped the other day. You want my blood? He smiles.
And if I did?
You can't have it, I answer sharply, narrowing my eyes at him. What is he?
I am ruin, Cella. I will be your ruin.
He states seriously.
If only I could stay away.
You should. I murmur weakly, thoroughly lost in his eyes. The last of the red has faded away until only the clear blue remains. The most beautiful blue.
If you continue to look at me like that, I won't be able to stop myself. Lovely Cella. You're far too tempting for a man who's never denied himself anything in his life.
I lick my lips, still staring at him. I have food. I'm not sure how much better than blood that is, but you can join me to eat. I don't know what prompts me to utter that foolish invitation. His eyes crinkle at the corners as his mouth spreads into a breathtaking smile.
As you wish.
He inclines his head. Taking my hand, he leads me to the kitchen, taking out a chair for me and seating me at the table. My gaze follows him silently as he moves around the kitchen, as if he's been here a million times before. He doesn't ask me any questions or demand anything of me. He simply heats up the food before pouring me a fresh serving and pouring himself another one. I keep watching him, barely even breathing for fear I'm going to disturb this scenery in front of me, that I'm going to blink and everything will turn out to be just a dream, just a figment of my imagination. Yet I doubt I could ever conjure up a male as striking as him, one who's equally ill-mannered as he is sweet. I doubt I am capable of such mental acrobats. So I just watch, letting that tingle of awareness spread all over my body. My heart thuds in my ear, my pulse seemingly going berserk. And as he surprises me by cutting some thyme and basil over my stew before doing the same for his own, I can no longer deny what is happening. I am smitten. Unfortunately, it had to be with an outlaw. The books certainly did not lie when they mentioned that you cannot command the heart. You read my mind about the flower, did you not? He nods. How did you get it so fast? It's endemic to the other end of the empire. On horseback, that would take at least a month.
I can move fast.
He smiles. What are you? I finally have the courage to ask. He falters for a moment.
It's better you don't know.
I frown. Why? He doesn't answer me, merely watching me with naked hunger in his gaze, despite having a sizable portion of food in front of him. You could at least give me your name, I mumble.
Aemon.
Aemon. I'd seen that name before in the history books, but I imagine it must be an immensely popular one since it's associated with one of the most infamous figures in the Viserion Empire's history.
I love hearing my name on your lips.
He murmurs. His hand reaches for my face as he brushes his thumb under my lip, swiping a stain of food off my skin and bringing it back to his own mouth. He sucks on his thumb with gusto, all the while his eyes never leaving mine. I blush, but I don't look away. Is it a dare or an invitation? A promise for the future, or a tease? Despite the unusual feelings he instills in me, there is something utterly comfortable about being in his presence. A deep desire unfolds inside of me to climb back on his lap and let him put his massive arms around me, surrounding me with a protective cocoon and never letting me go. Foolish, isn't it? I've only met him twice, and yet his arms feel like the home I've never had, despite living very self-sufficiently. Then I should tell you, Aemon, that I'm not versed in the politics of our world. I may have the theoretical basis down, but there are many things I do not know. If I ask, it is because I am genuinely curious. I tell him seriously. A brow goes up as he looks at me expectantly, almost as if I surprised him with my words. I've read all the canonical literature on the species of our world, and I have some knowledge about that. But I must confess I've never met anyone in person aside from my mother, a few of her acquaintances, and the staff that changes with the season. He purses his lips as he takes a moment to ponder his next words.
Do you know what a river is?
I frown and shake my head. The name is awfully familiar, but as I try to remember, I cannot do so.
They were a people in the north of the Empire many, many eons ago. They were few to begin with, but their numbers dwindled over the years since the Empire hunted them down to near extinction.
Why?
Because their abilities were unique.
How unique?
There are species on Arkgor that can wield the elements, but only the River of the North could wield matter.
Matter? Can you be more specific? He smiles. Holding out his hand, he materializes the flower pot from before and places it down on the table. My eyes widen in shock. I'd never read about anyone able to do something like that.
This is but one of the consequences of this ability. The most deadly one is wielding the matter of being. Quite simply put, I can make someone's insides explode. And to the Viserion Empire, that is something as dangerous as Viserion silver. Maybe more, because rhodium does not have a mind of its own.
So you're a... Rever?
Part. but I've never identified myself as such, just as I don't use those abilities, so I won't draw unnecessary attention to myself.
You're telling me it's dangerous for people to know you're part Reva?
That is correct.
Then why are you telling it to me if it's so dangerous? Aren't you afraid I'm going to tell someone? He shakes his head, his mouth curled up in a perpetual smile. But how would you know? I could very well be a spy planted here in the middle of nowhere to ply tales out of weary travellers. I shrug.
You've a very active imagination, lass, but I'm not worried you will tell on me.
Why? I narrow my eyes. I could be dangerous. I throw the idea out there. Mayhap not a spy, since clearly I would have failed at holding my own. I pause as I tap my jaw with my finger. But what if I were stationed here to seduce this information out of you?
You're trying very hard to convince me you're not to be trusted, lovely Sella. But say you were instructed to catch me here and seduce me. You'd be doing a rather poor job of it.
My cheeks flame at his insult. What do you mean?
You thought a sword was poking you in the backside, lass. Need I say more?
He asks, amused. But there was a sword. I reply lamely, embarrassment colouring me red from head to toe.